Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prisoners will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lease. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisoners in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. And mess around, he saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings. All of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you're having is When God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt. I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way. Your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out. He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, "Shoot it!" So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Styles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
So when people try to figure out how to make $1 million, they have no idea how daunting that is. Because if you know how to make $1 million, you go make it tomorrow. But since you can't figure out how to $1 million idea, you go somewhere and sit down. That's the wrong approach. If you apply your gift, your God-given gift that he gave you, you have millions already at your disposal. If you break it down inch by inch into things of sense for the 10 by 10 theory, which is very simple. You don't need $1 million idea. You need a $10 idea. You need something that you do, your gift that God gave you to make $10. That's all you got to be able to know. I don't care if it's cutting hair, cutting somebody's grass, washing somebody's car. I don't care if it's mowing somebody's lawn. I don't care if it's driving people to their destinations. I don't care if it's babysitting. I don't care if it's baking cookies or pie. You have some braiding somebody's hair. You have something that you can do so well that someone will give you $10 for it. Write my paper for me. Do this for me. Somebody give you $10 for it. Once they give you $10, all you got to do is whatever you did to get that 10, do it 10 more times. You now, my friend, have $100. You have $100 simply because you took a $10 idea and you did it 10 times. Well, guess what? If you take that $100 that you made since you've done it 10 times and you do it 10 more times, I got news for you, my friend. You now have $1,000. $1,000, you make $1,000. Guess what all you got to do? You got to multiply that effort again. Do whatever you did to do $1,000, do it 10 more times. My friend, you now have $10,000. You got $10,000 now. Imagine if you was making an extra $10,000 a month. Just imagine if you was making an extra $10,000 a month. That's $120,000 a year. But I got news for you, my friend. Whatever you did, whatever it took to make yourself $10,000, all you got to do is do it 10 more times. 10 more times, my friend, you now have $100,000. I got news for you now. If you can make $100,000, you're just a step away from being a millionaire, man. Because now you hire a few more people to help you out that you can do portions of what you do so you can duplicate that effort. And one more time, do it 10 times. Man, that sounds hard. It is hard. But what else you got to do? What, you going to stop at the 100,000? All you got to do is duplicate your efforts by 10. You duplicate your efforts by 10 times 100,000. Welcome to the club, my friends. You are now a millionaire. Congratulations. You became a millionaire with a $10 idea. So stop bogging yourself down trying to figure out how to make a million. Do what you can do to make $10. And then do the 10 by 10 theory. Inch by inch, anything's a cinch. Now here's the joyful part. Along the way, when you was down here making $20,000, but you did right here and now all of a sudden you're making $30,000. Now you're making $100,000. But on the way to duplicating that times 10, you may stop along in here at $250,000. You can make it $250,000 a year. That's way better than that $20,000 you had when you started. So there's joy in the process. Your life is actually a lot richer at $250,000. It'll become even more richer at $500,000. It becomes even richer than that at $750,000, $750,000. If you don't get to the million, man, you're going to trip because you're making $900,000 a year? No, you're going to be happy. What, you don't make the million, so you only make $700,000 a year? You can't find happiness in $7,000? Something wrong with you, man. There's joy in the process. That's how you make $1 million.
14-year-old bought this old camper for $500 and transformed it with her own two hands. Most teenagers are all too happy to spend their summers vacationing with family or lazing about with their friends. Some, however, embark on an adventure. Ellie Yeater was one such teen. After saving up $500 for a DIY project, she discovered a camper for sale online. It only cost $200, and so the 14-year-old decided to buy it. Once she purchased the camper, she got ready to completely transform it. The vehicle had originally been used for camping and hunting, and it was in pretty rough shape. It was fair to say she had her work cut out for her. Ellie got the idea to renovate the camper after her older brother Isaiah built a tiny cabin on their family's property. She wanted her own hangout spot, but she preferred something cuter and closer to the house so she could have electricity and Wi-Fi. She saw this as an opportunity to let her personality shine through with her design choices. That's exactly why she decided to paint the inside a peach color and fill it with polka dots and stripes. It suggested a fun and laid-back kind of setting. Ellie's father, Larry, helped with the carpentry, and her grandmother even made curtains to hang inside. Considering how small her living space was going to be, there were surprisingly lots of windows to cover. During the day, however, she planned to let in a lot of natural light. Many other components of the camper were outdated. Guessing that it was made in the 1970s, the original tiled floor featured a peculiar green pattern. Ellie decided to place new tiles on the floor with a more updated and modern appeal. She collected items that she could use to decorate the camper, too. She wanted to make sure it reflected her own personality and items like this chic dress form. She even made sure to construct a winding path to her new hideaway. Ellie hoped to save up for a window air conditioning unit to install the very next summer. That way, she could enjoy sleepovers with her friends during the summertime without worrying about people becoming uncomfortable and overheating. She also hoped to invite a few friends over for a party. There was plenty of space for them to hang out, and they could even gather around the renovated kitchen bench seating. It looked like the camper was ready for its big premiere. You can see that Ellie took every possible detail into consideration. Not only did she spend a lot of time making the inside look brand new, but she did it on the exterior too. It was all in a summer's work for Ellie. It just shows that with a little creativity and elbow grease, you can turn anything into an awesome hangout space. Ellie was certainly going to enjoy spending time in her renovated camper.
There'll be no more sleeping under bridges for some homeless folks in Muncie.
They're now eligible to apply to live in tiny houses that are under construction right now by a Muncie group called Bridges Community Services. This miniature housing initiative is the first of its kind in the state of Indiana. RTV6's Derek Thomas reports.
The tiny homes began arriving this morning. It would take about a month for the construction work to be completed on them.
By midday, the truck was still unloading the six 96-square-foot homes and placing them on their foundations. Each home will cost about $3,000.
I would love to be one of the ones left. I think it would be amazing to live in this right here.
Brandon May has been homeless and unemployed for about 5 months. Later this week, he will get a new job at a factory. He says these humble quarters can help him get back on his feet.
When you first walk in, when you're accustomed to a big house, you know, stuff like that, you might think no, but when you think about the layout and you think about sleeping on a park bench or sleeping underneath a bridge or anything like that, sleeping in someone's car, this is way more than enough room.
The tiny homes will have electricity and heat, but a separate community building will be constructed where this basketball court is that will contain bathroom and shower facilities on one side and a kitchen facility on the other. None of the homeless selected to live here will be hardened criminals.
Everyone is vetted, which means basically we do police checks on everyone that comes in. We will not serve any violent offenders, and we will not serve any lifetime sex registry people.
Some neighborhood residents think it is a positive development.
When I seen it, I think it's on Facebook, and I thought, wow, that is a really good idea. Why didn't somebody think of that sooner?
And you think they're doing a community service?
Oh, yeah.
They expect 50 to 100 applications to live in these homes. They begin accepting those applications October 1st. Move-in is set for November 1st. In Muncie, Derek Thomas, RTV 6.
The entire tiny homes project will cost about $80,000. Staffers will be on the property 24 hours a day to make sure all goes well. Residents of the homes could pay up to $50 a month for utilities.
You want to support Roller Mark Unfiltered? Be sure to join our Bring the Funk fan club. Every dollar that you give to us supports our daily digital show. There's only one daily digital show out here that keeps it black and keep it real as Roller Mark Unfiltered.
So why in the fuck don't you dream more? It happens. I still dream.
The kids, the big kids, smart kids, are taping them, their own voice, and listening to them all night. So they work subliminally. Some of the kids go to Fiverr or Tenor, you know, those things online where you can get somebody with a soothing, sexy voice. Okay. And they listen to them all night. I didn't do that. All I did was read them in the morning and read them at night.
The last thing I do every night is I fall asleep saying my prayers. My wife can attest to that. I fall asleep every single night saying my prayers. I have for 68 years.
Prayers or affirmations?
No. Affirmations first, prayers last. Prayers, I fall asleep doing, because I don't want to fall asleep during my affirmations. Affirmations, then prayers.
Because your brain doesn't know you're full of shit, or your subconscious doesn't know you're full of shit. And that's why, I mean, programming yourself and your habits really isn't that difficult. When you understand what makes the synapses fire, it's not that hard.
Athletes have been doing this since the first Olympia 2,000 years ago. Affirmation. John Elway saw himself a goal to win a Super Bowl in overtime since he's 6 years old, but he didn't say the first Super Bowl. It took him the third Super Bowl before he won. The kids, it's phenomenal. It's mostly been used over the last 100 years by athletes, and only more recently by business people like yourselves the last 30, 40 years. But it works. Abso-fucking-lutely it works.
We have people, coincidentally, they're the successful ones that do it five times a day. Five times a day. Okay. Athletes, you know, world champions, gold medalists, all do this.
Believe me, and we're going to, you know, I can't wait. I'm waiting with bated breath to hear you say your affirmations, but they do come true. And Andre Agassi was saying affirmations when he was 3 or 4 years old. 3 or 4 years old for tennis. And he's the only one I know about, so that I know, but most of the great athletes Mr. Obama. I don't think much of him as a president, but I mean, I take my hat off to him vis-a-vis goals and affirmations. When he was a 19-year-old pothead in California at a college, he said, I'm going to be the first black president in the United States. And everything he did was pointed at that. And by God, fuck, it happens. It happened. Notwithstanding, I don't agree with anything he said. But the power for a guy when he was 19 to say there was going to be a black president, he had to be high. There was no question. He had to be high when he said that.
And that's why affirmations work so effectively. Because your subconscious doesn't know you're full of shit. And when you tell, you know, I'm going to be trillionaire, dominate the world, and your subconscious doesn't know it. And when you tell your subconscious a million times, and then every success you have is a self-fulfilling prophecy. Athletes, world-class athletes get this like, they took a poop in the morning. World-class athletes, you know, 20 years, they see themselves standing on the podium getting a gold medal at the Olympics. And we're going to have four or five stories of guys that I personally trained that were able to do that. But you'll never exceed your most bodacious goal. If you say, I've got mentees, I'm going to go to the Olympics. They went, they didn't get a medal. I've got mentees that I'm going to go to the Olympics and I'm going to medal. What the fuck's that mean? They get a bronze. And I'm only telling you this because your outside environment does affect how you think. And some of the kids do their affirmations, they tape them, and they listen to them all night. All night. The goal for the team was to go to the state finals. They went to the state finals and lost 2-1. The next year, his goal was to win the state finals. They went to the state finals and won 3-4. Is that subtle? There's a big difference between asking Miss Universe out and fucking Miss Universe. Big quantum difference. How many affirmations did you have? I have 22. I told you that. My 22, I told you how they break down. The personal goals, I only have 5 or 6 left. And I have, I think, 6 or 7 affirmations that are associated to those. The rest of mine are related to you, my children, Sally, and a number of the charities that I'm involved in. Begin each affirmation with the words, I am. I am, it means in the present tense. And that means your little pea brain, it'll register in the present tense. Okay. You're going to add an emotion word to each affirmation. I'll give you an example in a minute. You're going to write each affirmation in the present tense using the verb that ends in ing. I'll show you examples in a second. Next, you're going to say each affirmation out loud at least twice a day. You heard Matt say he does his affirmation, I think he said 2 or 3 times, 3 times a day. We have people, not coincidentally, they're the successful ones that do it 5 times a day. 5 times a day. If one of your wants is to increase your net worth by $5 million every month, then you turn it into a goal by writing it down on your goal list as, I want to increase my net worth by $5 million a month or more a month, every month. The affirmation would be, I am happy and easily increasing the amount of my net worth, $5 million or more every month. That's low, a little low, but we'll start for this group, $5 million a month. Okay. The phrase I am sends a command to your subconscious so that it can work on this goal for you even while you're asleep. The term happily and easily tell your subconscious that you will not struggle to accomplish this. This works well for me because it also helps me shorten my workday. You may want to use another term that will help you experience the emotions of increased amounts of savings. I use words fucking I'm excited, I have a fucking erection, I'm having multiple orgasms, it's so fucking easy. The present tense word increasing creates a stress between you, what you are saying, and reality so that your subconscious acts with a sense of urgency to make this happen. The or more is important also because when you realize how easy it is to increase your savings amount by $5 million a month, you may want to immediately raise the amount. These two little words will have already sent the message to your subconscious, and you will you will reach the monthly amount quicker. The best times to say the affirmations are in the morning when you get up and in the evening just before you go to sleep. By saying them at night, you are commanding your subconscious to work on them while you sleep. By saying them in the morning, you give your subconscious the opportunity to present a report of what it did while you were asleep. The increased focus you experience as a result of this simple activity will produce phenomenal results so that you truly get what you want in life. This is our homework. Any questions about this?
What about short affirmations like I am a genius, I am intelligent, are those working too? Or
no. Well, you'd be lying to yourself, but that's not the point. Okay. Now, I am confident, becoming more innately bright through QLA, because it's a process. It's not I am. Just say I am. I am excited about becoming. I am excited about being. Now, there are all kinds of more complicated ways to write affirmations. You can Google fuck this, and you could write a PhD white paper, which I hope none of you do. This is the simplest format that I've found that works. The operative word part of that is works. There's all kinds of sophisticated shit done on affirmations. Why you do it in the morning and the night. Your brain's in a theta state, and a this state, and all kind of shit. But you don't need any of that. All you need to know is this fucker works. It's not important that you know why it works. All you need to know is it fucking works. And don't send me in your weekly report a link about the study done at fucking Stanford, and I'm not interested in that. All I know is this fucking thing works. I don't give a fuck what they did at Stanford, MIT, or wherever the other. I did a bunch of other studies done as well. You know, like those affirmations we saw that were just tits and ass. But yeah, I'm not telling you to forget the tits and ass. But I mean, money comes to me unexpectedly. I feel overwhelmed but not satiated with money that comes to me unexpectedly. You don't want to be satiated. Satiated means that you get used to it. It becomes your default. I mean, and staying successful, guys, is a hell of a lot fucking harder than getting success. I mean, it's staying because default, I mean, being rich, I haven't had to work in 35 years. You know, some kids at the Jason Capital thing that you were at asked me, how do you get up in the morning? You know, what motivation do you have to get up? That's where the society is now. What do you mean, well, how do I get up in the morning? I mean, I've been one of the goals you should have, and all of you should have, is that goal is to form new, bodacious, extraordinary habits of the high-performance person, okay? And then your affirmation associated with that is, I'm ecstatic, overwhelmed, how easy I attract good habits, high-performance people, and easily I can lead people, enforce QLA, being all that you can be. I mean, what you need, remember, you're the average of the five people that you hang around with. And right now, for the most part, there's a few exceptions, most of those people are dog shit, okay? And so you want a higher echelon. You want a higher bar. You want higher expectations.
You'll say to your boss one day, you quit. 69% said yes, 31% said no. Do you ever dream that you have a secret power such as the ability to read minds, become invisible, or control other people's actions? 62% said yes, 38% said no. Are you ever shocked out of a daydream and unable to answer the question someone has asked you? 45% said yes, 55% said no. And have you had at least one fucking daydream in the last year that you turned into reality? 71% said yes, and 29% said no. So why in the fuck don't you dream more? It happens. I still dream. Had their dreams come to fruition. So it seems like a fucking no-brainer to me. But I got a brain. And apparently most don't. It's so fucking simplistic. Maybe my mom was right letting me believe in Santa Claus till I was 11 fucking years old. My cousins say I was 13. I think that's a stretch, but my older cousins tease me, you know. They also say that I breastfed till I was 11, which is also, I believe, a bit of a stretch, Mom. But, you know. But so why don't we? Because it's not conventional wisdom. It's all right for our kids to do that shit. But not us. Because we're all grown up now. We're adults. And that's so fucking horseshit. Guys, this is new shit. You know, when I tell you dream in my closing remarks in a few days, dream, get outside the box, be passionate, get selfish, love yourself. You can't love somebody else unless you love yourself. I mean, it works. And it's not new stuff. People have been saying this for not just decades, but thousands and thousands of years. We've shown you enough slides from Plato and all these people from the year, you know, a long time ago. It is. It's not new stuff. But the difference between me and the rest of the industry, if you can call it that, is I'm telling you it's a motherfucker because it's hard. I'm not telling you it's easy. Because if it was easy, you would have already done it. With all the fucking shit you read, you fucking idiot, and all the pod fucks you've listened to, and all, if it was so bloody fucking easy, you'd already be there.
Okay, what's the affirmation associated with that goal? Now, that could easily be broken down to 4 or 5 goals, okay? 4 or 5 goals, excuse me, 4 or 5 goals do not have to have 4 or 5 affirmations. One affirmation can be all-inclusive for the 4 or 5 goals. Now, go,
Leonard.
Now, just to give you an aside, when I came up with this, I wanted to be with a castle on an island with a moat, da-da-da-da, and I see my children playing tennis, playing golf on our own golf course. I see the our governesses and nannies that once worked in the Buckingham Palace. I saw that, okay. I see myself strutting around the property, and I visualize this with my boots and my riding crop. Being the most influential gentleman farmer in Scotland. No, that's what I saw, okay? It's before I had that fucking painting, before I had any of this. And so that's what I would say twice a day, okay? Go ahead.
Do I have to?
No, you don't have to, okay.
I got only goal?
One goal and an affirmation.
Okay. Well, help kids to go private school and start their business. Well, my kids are charged driving their businesses and being more successful in their areas.
Okay, you got to add more adjectives. You got to make it more colorful. So words, that, remember, can't be too bodacious, can't be too overwhelming. You know, for example, if you wanted your kids to, you know, go into space, I see them walking on the moon, I see them easily going to flight school. I see them easily taking off the first time with the jet thrust. I feel the G's of the jet thrust. I mean, you got to really elaborate. Again, because your subconscious doesn't know that it, you know, it's just bullshit. And the more you say it, I mean, the athletes understand this. When they're talking about they're in the third or fourth year of skiing, I see myself, winning the downhill by a full 2 seconds, which is virtually impossible, by the way. You don't win downhills, but you win it by 0.02 of a second. I see myself in the cold wind on my face, accepting the gold medal. I accept the accolades and the applause of the Austrian people, if you're Austrian, or the Russian people, if you're Russian, or the American people, if you're American. I see, you've got to really throw yourself into it. You really have to go over the top. Okay.
Mine's not that specific.
Okay, well, tell me, and then I'll make it specific when I tart it up.
I am passionately adding more and more money and assets.
Okay, what's the goal, though? The goal?
$30,000 is buying whatever I want.
$30,000. Well, I would have made the goal. It's well within my comfort zone having unlimited expenses daily. Then the affirmation, I am wildly overwhelmed with joy, knowing that no matter how much money I spend, it's not a dent, it's not a fraction, it's not chump change. I mean, and there are people in the world that have no, Sally sometimes thinks she's one, but she has no limits to not her abilities, her ability to spend money. You want this, and when you talk to your kids about affirmations, and you can start affirmations at 3, 4, 5 years old. You start with goals. With kids, you start goals first, then affirmations. So when they get used to the goals and they understand the goals, then you add the affirmations. If you add the affirmations with kids too early, with the goals, they get confused. Okay. Now I'm talking about 3, 4, 5 years old. If your kid's 18 years old, he's not going to get confused. Okay. Almost everybody understands goals. Very few people understand the affirmations that are associated with goals.
All right, today's topic, we're going to keep this short and brief. We're going to build tiny houses or dwellings, Jamaican style, at least to start off. Well, this is one strategy, and I call it building Jamaican style. Typically in Jamaica, a lot of them are not using banks or government programs to borrow money or insure it. They build as they go based on the cash they have on hand. So simplifying matters, I say, you know what, if we can just start off with a floor. Now, I don't know, Reba, if you're out there, press 1. So we can get you in on this little bit of conversation. But floor construction, we want to take a look at, because we're taking for granted that people know nothing about building construction. So we're going to take a look at, a floor. The different types of floors, the component parts of a floor, what are they? And if you go to our Facebook page, which is, It's My House TV at Earthwell Forest. And let me go to that right now. Let's see. Once again, on our Facebook page is It's My House Forest. It's My House at at Earthwell Forest. Okay. Now, I have on there, a couple of links. Let's go to, one says floor framing and structure. We're going to go over that in a moment. And then the other one is Skip the Trailer. Should you build your tiny house on skids? We're going to do skids. We're going to do skids. And let's see. If you go up above that, let me see. Let's see. Pictures. Okay. Let me put some pictures up here. Okay, then am I missing? Okay, that's all right. All right, I just posted on our Facebook page, which is It's My House TV at Earth Wealth Forest. Okay, here we go, we got it loaded. All right, and let me share that to another page. All right. If you click on, I've got four pictures there. All right. Now, one of them says six types of floor construction. Then we also have Skip the Trailer, should you build your tiny house on skids. So we'll be building on skids. All right, and then you scroll a little bit up on that, and I've got an illustration where you see that's what we'll be building. Okay, and so what are the parts of that? You know, what are joists, also known as floor joists? And then, you know, skids, there's three listed in that picture. And let's see, we scroll all the way up, and then you just see you know, it's pretty simple. That's the first thing we're gonna concentrate on. Floor construction. All right, now we'll be doing this via Zoom call, or I don't know where Reba is right now, but anyway, so we're going to focus in on that as well as the cost and additional materials that might be needed. For you know, are we going to use screws or nails, or if so, what type of screws or what kind of nails will we be using? Will it be metal? You know, building material metal, or you know, anything that you know, including safety, health and safety, and. We're just starting off with something simple, the floor. I think everybody can process that because it might be kind of daunting of, oh, wait a minute, I'm building a tiny house or, you know. So we're reducing things down to, we're doing this Jamaican style, piece by piece. We're going to educate you on the floor. The component parts of the different types of floors, the types of floors we're going to be dealing with, and, you know, what are joists? Where do joists go? You know, what are skids? Where do they go? Why skids versus building on a trailer with wheels? Or versus building on... placing a permanent built on a concrete slab. So we'll go through all that. And taking a page out of Dan Pena's book, affirmations. What floor affirmations or what housing affirmations, but we're going to start with floors. What flooring affirmations are we going to repeat at least once a day? And then floor application, okay, and we got it in our subconscious here. We're saying it daily. Build it. Then once we build one, how long does it take us to build the first one? And then, you know, well, if it took us so long to build or assemble or construct one floor, how long would it take if we want doing the start Steve Harvey thing? You know, 10 by 10. How many floors can we construct? And this is just building parts. Because we'll start off with the floor, then we'll go with the walls, you know, the front of the building, the back of the building, and roof. But we're starting off real simple. Floors. Okay. And it'll be built on skids, so we don't have to worry about pouring slab or nothing like that. We're trying to simplify it as much as we can. I don't know where Reed was at, but we're going to have a class on this online tomorrow. And I have to catch up with Reed on what time tomorrow, which is Saturday, for this. Wait a minute. All right, so and actually we have to do it with the metal buildings as well. So I'm just waiting for my phone to repopulate here. Okay. Yeah, so you know, different parts of floor, skids, what are skids, what's the subfloor, what are joists, you know, what's the floor base, stuff like that. And I figure that'll be easy for people to digest, particularly if you have absolutely zero experience with this. It shouldn't be intimidating. So we're breaking things up in component parts. And, okay, all right. Let's see. Okay, I'm just waiting for my studio to repopulate on my phone. Okay, let's see. 309 area code, your mic is open.
Good morning. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning. Yeah. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Yeah, I was looking at listening to you on the different kinds of flooring, you know, different kind of floor systems, get away from the trailer.
Right.
You can put these things on stilts. So if you have ground that can flood, you can put these things on stilts. You can actually make them float. So,
well, let's talk about that for a moment. Stilts.
Okay.
About how? Well, I guess give us an example of how high off the ground, and one of the reasons why you might want to build on stilts. Because I like it. It's that sounds simple. Enough to do. So go more into detail on that.
I was going to say the one thing I like about the stilts is it gives you a whole entire floor below your house. That say it is yard, you know, it's not necessarily something that floods every day, but it can. So on an everyday basis, you can utilize that as being covered up. You know, and have a shaded area for people to come and visit and have parties and do different things. Because I built a house right there in Mississippi. It's in Purlington, Mississippi. It's on the corner of Tampa and Daytona Street. And it's the first house if you're headed toward the ocean, so the direction of south from where you are is the direction you would walk if you're Google Earthing this thing. But people can remember Tampa and Daytona Street or drive. But that house is on the right-hand side of the road, and you'll see a house like a on a hill, on a, like a dome home, that's on the left. So, all right, let's get back to the stilts. That house is 10 feet off the ground. It's 2,500 square feet. So that ranch-style house is now 1,000 feet because you have an area that can be closed in, because when you get there and look at that, that is actually closed in. It's on stilts. It can flood, but now he's closed it in. So now he added 2,500 square feet of closed-in area under his house. Now, that's it. You know, you can drive
now,
your car.
If you're
right
building on
top.
Stilts, let me ask you this. If you're building on stilts, I imagine you've got to have those stilts anchored in to a permanent foundation?
Actually, no, they just go in the ground. And once they pound them down and they're in there, that's it. Them things ain't coming out. And you make sure that you seal coat them, because anything made of wood, if you put, you know, you can do metal stilts, okay? You don't have to do wooden ones. But if you do the wooden ones, that house down there, it's on wooden stilts, but those stilts were already there. The house was taken. So it wasn't there. But we built it back on the stilts that were already in the ground. And that's the one thing that when the homes got taken, the stilts, a lot of them were still standing. There was nothing else, but the stilts were still there. So the only thing that would take them out would be something hitting them as it's coming in. And that would be a ship or something like that. Because when I saw Katrina, you know, I'm 5 miles from the ocean. And I'm looking at a ship.
Okay.
That's, you know what I mean? That,
right.
You ain't stopping, right? So,
right.
But that ship was standing up in the trees. So in the swamp, this thing was standing upright, like 150 feet out of the trees. And I'm like, how did that get there? You know what I mean? I'm a long way from the ocean. There should be no reason for this ship to be standing upright in the trees, but it was something that I experienced when I got there. But that house was built in 06. Now, if you think about building on stilts, building in a flood area, building in a danger zone, the insurance is going to be astronomical. So be smart. Build out of something that they don't tell you, but they give you discounts if you use it. So they don't tell you. You have to educate yourself. It's just like being educated about the law. Just because they make a new law and you don't know about it doesn't mean it's not your fault. So it's always about educating yourself. But understand, if you build it out of a certain material, now it won't burn. So they give you a 20 for that. It won't grow mold. So they give you a 20 for water. Then it's stronger. So they give you a 20 for wind. Now, the way insurance works is they give you the first 20, takes you to 80. Then they give you 20 off the 80. Then they give you 20 off the 67. And that brings you to 49.8% cheaper than wood. That's just with those three. But if you're in a seismic area, they'll give you another discount. They'll give you another discount for termites. So like when you treat your house, you actually get something, you know, that your house is protected. So they'll, you know, they help you with that. But they'll ask you, you know, when you go to insure your home, if it's ever been checked or if it has any termite damage. Now, these are all things that you can save money on. But when you think about what they did in Katrina, you know, it went from this guy paying you know, $11,000 a year to have his house there on the water to a $22,000 bill. And with building out of this material, the man actually pays less now than he did before Katrina took his other one, because they doubled the insurance rates after Katrina. So they went up 400%, but then the government made them lower to 200%, but they still went 100% more money to insure a house. Well, there was no jobs. There's no sustainability. The people that were there, they couldn't afford to rebuild. And even if they just had a shotgun house, that's why their FEMA trailers were, you know, they were using them for so long, because there were so many problems. And, you know, they got to the point where they were telling people that they had to have their house 30 feet at the floor at times down there. So you have to have an elevator just to get to your house. But they wanted you to be higher than what the water was.
Right.
And if your house was up there and the water came in, still be up there and you'd be okay. Hopefully. But you'd still be dealing with the hurricane. You know, you're up there in wide open air because there's no trees. You were high, you know, they wanted to build the houses higher than the trees. So there's, you know, a lot of reasons that people need to look at what they do, but, you know, stilts are a great thing. They cost a little less than what a foundation would cost, but you're gaining a floor. So you're gaining a whole entire space of what that is.
When you built your house on stilts, I went to YouTube, and excellent innovation you mentioned, because I saw one house on stilts on YouTube. I didn't watch the video yet, but I just went through the thumbnail. And it created three de facto carports or garages. So the house is on stilts, but it's high enough where you can park three cars in the space that you have under the building. That's an idea. Stilts.
Yeah, you get to utilize the floor space. And if it, you know, you can put your car under it and still have so much room that, I mean, when you looked at this house that we done, there's more space underneath that house than people need just to have space, period. So, I mean, 2,500 square feet is a lot. But when you go stick this ranch up in the air, for it to turn into 5,000, you need to understand a thing looks like a mansion standing there without being super fancy. You can do anything you want to the exterior. You know, you can make it look any way you want. That's the beautiful thing about it. But, you know, utilizing the space, getting more out of your dollar, you know, I think off the grid, I truly believe in stilts, because for one, the higher you get, the more shade you're going to get from the trees that you're inside of,
right,
when you're out there. So that's why they have canopy houses, you know, because it's cooler using that thermal blanket of the leaves, but also being up there and catching the breeze that's not down on the ground. See, with, you know, just airflow, period, and purity, you're up there with the filters, you know? So,
right. Let's see, I'm looking. Man, that's an excellent idea. I would. The one video says build a tree house with stilts without trees.
Yeah, without the trees. And then taking the underneath of it, and why not turning it into your solar wall for your glazing, and make your greenhouse under the house So now,
excellent
me,
idea.
That, you know, it just hit me, and I'm like, wait a minute, why don't we put the greenhouse under the house and put the people above it, and when you come to go to your home, you have to come by and see nature grow.
Right.
You know, actually go through the atrium to get into your home.
Hmm. I'm taking notes as you're talking. Let's see.
You know, that's what we are. We're creators, right? We never know what we're going to think about. I never know what anyone's going to think about. But if we think about it and we share it, well, maybe it can be an innovation that would start a sensation, you know. I think everybody needs to eat. And to know you had plenty and you can say, hey, you know, we could even set it up to where there's an LED sign outside running off solar that would tell people driving down the road that you have fresh vegetables. And now you become, if nothing else, a farm stand. But if you were a community that was in need like that, fresh tomatoes, and you had pineapple, fresh bananas in the middle of the winter, you know, right there. I think you would be able to help other people realize that, hey, what he's doing, we can do, or what she's doing, we can do. And that helps people get a clue that there's stuff out there that we don't know, but we all need to know. And not that, you know, there's a dollar to be made, but there's definitely a need that needs to be met. And I don't know. I think building tiny villages on stilts with growing systems that actually turn into profit. So if you take somebody from poverty and we're able to set them up immediately but they can employ. They can have somebody that has no purpose, you know, don't know what they're doing. They're sitting at home. They ain't got anything planned. Nobody's going to get a hold of them. Well, now that person can come over and need the garden.
Right.
Just check it out. You know, just spend time there. And now that person is there taking money for you. And you can take credit cards. We can set you up. And it won't cost you a dime. You don't have to pay the processing fee or nothing. But now you'll accept anybody's debit card that comes down the street. Not only that, 3.8% of that can be donated to the charity to help any other community. So now it's a commerce thing, you know. How do we become sustainable? Let's utilize what we already have and redivert it into what we need. So it's not about them getting what they want. They want a bigger bottom line. Well, I want people's needs met. So I think that would do it. So anybody listening, you know, go to hopeforhousing.org, you know. Call. Tell me what your problems are in the community, where you are. So that way we don't have to try to come and find you. Come find me. And then we will find a solution to those problems. You know, just the steel material, you know, making 2 feet of material per second. Think about it, guys. Ladies, if you're walking, every step you take could be a 3-foot stride. Well, that takes a second and a half. How long did it take you to walk it? Could you walk out 36,000 feet today? That machine will make it, whether you're sitting on a couch or not.
Right.
I just need to know where it's going. So,
I really
like
this field idea. Particularly for a wooded area.
We can make the stilts out of the material. I know we can. I would just have to roll 16 gauge more than likely. But what I would suggest to stilts, especially, I mean, you know, if you're not in a zone that's going to have an issue with Mother Nature, that's wanting to come in and take your wrath out, because this earth gets cleansed. Every now and again, she just comes in and says, you know what? kind of wash you. And I don't know, you know, on New Year's Eve, I got a cleansing, you know, just so the people on air know. I got a phone call. And I happened to be, I just ran a hot bath, just worked, I just ran a hot bath, I was going to lay in it. And my phone rang, and it's someone in the mayor's office in L.A. And then some more organizations came on the phone. You know what I mean? And I laid in that bath for two, that water got cold, but I couldn't push, I couldn't turn on the water. I wasn't going to let these people know that I was there. But, man, I got washed because there was skin came off of me that I didn't think was going to ever come off. You know, I didn't, it just peeled off. I pruned like a grape, turned into a raisin, you know. So think about it. Mother Nature does the same thing to us. But I had an eye-opening situation, and it made me feel better all the way around. I was cleaned inside and out by that conversation because they gave me the answers I needed as I was giving them answers they needed. So it was a mutual, beautiful thing. And I look forward to what it's going to bring to people that feel like they have nothing. But the part that I had a problem with is how do we choose who the first ones are that get it? That was been my biggest dilemma in my mind on how to be equal, but also do what's correct first. And the only thing I can really think of is children. I'm not going to say man or woman. I'm just going to say parents. Children and parents need to be taken care of first. But that doesn't mean a single person means anything less to me. So then it's tough for me to make that decision. Because I don't want to make a judge, you know, judge on a call there that if someone's life matters, because all your lives matter to me. If I don't know you, I want to. So that's the one thing I try to tell people is when we cross paths, you know, it turns to a crossroad. Now that road's smooth, and we know that we can haul butt down a highway, right? So if we can drive smooth down a road, let's bring people off them beaten paths. And I love that's what your whole podcast has been about, you know, for 9 years, is what to do right, how can you educate, and not take a dime. Pouring into others, educating them. So I just appreciate you, L.A., for even giving me a chance to be on air with you, bro. I'm very humble.
Because, like I said, I've been taking notes here the whole time. Wait a minute. I got to find my way back on this phone. Okay, J.R. Earth. I've never done stilts, but I'm going to do them now. Ballpark figure cost on, I mean, what's all involved with, you know, the Still Foundation?
Actually, there's companies in every community, poles in the ground.
All right.
And that's basically what that comes down to, is getting a hold of a rigging company. And that's RIGGING. They're there. I mean, they set telephone poles every day, you know.
Right.
They you can pour a concrete deal where it's not, you don't stick the thing way down in the ground, but you take one of those cardboard tubes and you make a foundation, you know, that there's a pedestal. And then right on top of the pedestal, you can bolt on the stilt. So you can turn around and drill, you know, 8 holes, and you say, I'm going with a pretty good sized house there. 8 holes would probably do, you know, 600 feet and give you your center supports and everything, because you don't necessarily have to have them, but if I got to stick it up in the air, I'd want the thing to be as strong as I could stick it. But I can span with the floor joists. We can span 30 feet without center support. So I can make you a basement. So So put your foundation in, put the walls up for the foundation or for the basement, and set on top of that a 30-foot floor joist and give you a wide-open basement. There's not a house in America that has that.
Okay.
So you can have that. And it meets the 3,000-pound per square foot load. I wound up doing a demonstration at, you know, one of the big lumber yards, and I got the product right off their shelf of the engineered beams that they have. They're 20 foot long, and you can't span more than 20 feet. They want you to put a brace at 16 feet, and sometimes even less, depends on the load that's above it. But they don't want you to go more than 20 with wood. Now, I took their 20-foot engineered joists and set them up on cinder blocks that I got right off their right out of their store. I brought everything out of the store, set it up in the parking lot, and took a roll of steel. And it sits on a pencil line. It's a solid roll. It's stiff. So when we took it off the forklift and we set it down right on the 10-foot line on those engineered joists, there's a thing called deflection. So when it's sitting there straight, so like when you – just give you an example, when you look at a semi-flatbed trailer and it don't have a lot of weight on it, you'll notice that it's bowed up. Well, they do that because when it gets the load on, it'll straighten out. So they're made out of aluminum. Now – the steel ones are all straight. They're not bowed like that because the steel will stand there and hold the weight because it's stronger. Now, on this deflection, when we done that, we measured what it was up to the floor joist before we put the weight on, and then we got to put it right on the 10-foot at 3,000 pounds and set it right on the scale or right on that center line, and it bowed. So we measured the deflection.
Right.
How much did it bow? Then it met the requirements that the country says it needs to make. So then we got two of these floor joists that we just made that are 30 foot long. We stretched out the cinder blocks, and we set up these two floor joists, and we took that line at 15 feet and made it and took that roll and set it right on that line. And it deflected less at 15 feet than theirs did at 10 feet. So it beat it. And I already stretched out there another 10 feet. So I went half again as much as they already were doing and beat it. But this material weighs half the weight of wood, but it's twice as strong.
Right. Okay.
That's just a for instance.
While you've been talking, I've been taking notes on what you've been talking about. Plus, I ran across a video about 2 or 3 weeks ago. This is a couple. They started out of Atlanta, but they built the Airbnb business based on tree houses, but built on stilts. And they did that doing like over $700,000 a year on that. Let's see. Let me hold on. I'm trying to find my way back to the studio. Yeah, because if you're in an area that have a flood, I'm also thinking not only will it give you more space, but if you're in a wooded area, you know, you don't have to worry about certain creepy crawlers getting into you as well. I like that idea. And it's simple to do.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I don't know where the weaver's at today. Go ahead, Chris, and listen.
I was going to say there's a trick that I learned a long time ago about the foam insulation. You can take borax just put borax in the mix. And if anything, any rodent, like a rat or a mouse or cockroach or anything tries to come into that wall, it'll die. It can't make it through. Your house is already sprayed for pests just by sealing it up.
Yeah, I like that though, because you do have to factor in critters, particularly if you're in a rural area or a wooded area. Okay, all right, Reba. I don't know where she's at today, but I'll catch up to her. Okay, well, any announcements, Chris, or anything? Because I'm fascinated with this still thing. I'm going to be watching a bunch of videos just asking, you know, building on stilts.
Yeah, no. Stilts work. And I think it might be something we most definitely investigate a little different. I'm gonna talk to the architect and stuff about incorporating underneath, since we only use the glazing wall. So instead of the whole greenhouse and all the walls and all the windows and the roof being the capture of catching the solar, this, you know, is done off one wall. So I'm interested to see what they think of that idea, because utilizing the same footprint, that means we build one foundation, but we get two items, and one of them produces revenue.
Okay. All right, Chris. Well, thanks for the idea. That was monumental. Building on stilts. Like I said, I'm gonna spend my afternoon watching a bunch of YouTube videos on this, because I was bookmarking and taking notes on it while you were. And on that note, we're going to wrap up early for today. Everybody have a great weekend, this being the first weekend of 2023.